be working a case or in a courtroom.
The elevator dings, and a male voice calls out,
Cole Brooks, you son of a bitch.
Cole stops walking, and we turn together to find Kat's brother Gabe, who I've met a few times before exiting the elevator.
Who's the son of a bitch?
Cole challenges, moving forward to shake Gabe's hand.
You look like shit, man.
I almost laugh at this comment, because Gabe is really not a man that looks like shit, considering he's tall, with sandy blonde hair, and a hard body in a fitted suit. But he does appear a bit wearier than usual.
Thanks for pointing that out, you bastard,
Gabe replies.
I'm in the middle of trial prep for a bitch of a case.
Gabe shifts his attention to me.
I heard they stuck you with Cole, and after consulting on a case with him recently, I have to ask, has he made you as miserable as he made me yet?
I have a flash of me on the desk, head thrown back and moaning that has me clearing my throat and saying, extremely miserable. And I'm pretty sure I blush when I say it, but if Gabe notices, he doesn't comment.
Stay close to me tonight,
he suggests instead.
I'll keep you away from the Brooks insanity. This man,
Cole chimes in, glancing at me,
is the real man whore.
Gabe holds up his hands.
I am not a man whore, and I have never tried to pick up Lori.
Which is not true. He actually has.
Well, not that my sister knew about,
he adds, laughing.
Kat would kill me, literally. And I'd represent her when she'd done the job.
Cole promises, not even trying to hide his meaning.
Message received,
Gabe says.
And on that note, where's the booze?
Cole motions Gabe forward.
Drink and be merry. I plan to,
Gabe says, disappearing through the doors.
Great attorney and friend,
Cole says as we move toward the doors ourselves.
But he really is the man whore.
He glances over at me.
Who I want nowhere near you.
The possessiveness in his tone, in his eyes, does funny things to my belly. And you're not? I challenge.
Sweetheart, I haven't touched a woman since you.
I'm stunned and pleased and confused by this confession. You haven't?
No, I've been obsessed with you, and I still am.
Isn't obsession bad?
Feels pretty damn good to me.
He doesn't give me time to react to that statement. He opens the doors to allow my entry into the party, and I have this impression that's by intent. He wants me to think about those words the entire night, and I will. I enter the party to find the massive open space clustered with people, standing tables, and random displays of food for the taking. I've barely had time to survey it all before Cole is at my side, and Reese is motioning us toward a group of people.
Here we go,
Cole says. The two of us crossing to join Reese, who wastes no time involving us with the guests.
Meet Jared Moore,
he says of a short, stocky man next to him, who is apparently the CEO of a large company battling a variety of legal woes created by the ex-CFO, details I know simply because Kat wrote an article about the man.
I hear you're the man to hire,
Jared says to Cole, which I'm certain will become a theme for the night.
Only when I'm sold on the case,
Cole says, motioning to me.
Meet Lori Havens, a rising star who will be second chair on my upcoming cases, whatever they may be.
Cole says those words without hesitation, confident enough to praise me, to share the spotlight with, rather than consuming it all alone, where I have known men who would. My ex, for instance. It matters to me, just like his claim to seeing no other woman since me matters. I think he might matter to me, beyond sex and fantasies, but it's a thought I shove away out of necessity and conversation. From our CEO introduction, we move on to meet lawyers, doctors, executives, several retired and active ADAs, judges, reporters, and the list goes on. In between each, Cole treats me like his student, asking me to assess each person, asking my opinion of their character, and he listens with genuine interest. We debate several topics, and I find that I am enjoying the evening, taking in the people with Cole. I like our debates. I like to hear his opinions. He engages me, challenges me, interests me beyond all the reasons I already have to be interested. We're about an hour into the event, and Cole is in deep debate with another attorney over a judge's ruling that I really want to hear about when Kat calls my name. I glance up, and my heart falls to my feet when I spy the familiar, tall, good-looking man in a blue suit who's standing with her. My ex, my asshole of an ex, is here. Chapter 29. Lori. Since there is no way around a confrontation with my ex, I just go toward it and silently step away from Cole, quickly walking toward my newly minted problem, with my ex watching my every step. Kat greets my arrival excitedly. "I had no idea you knew Lance," Kat says. "He just told me you go way back." "We do," I say, my voice as cold as he makes me feel. "Lance," I greet, meeting his green eyes to ensure that he knows that I am not pleased to see him. In fact, aside from the early few months with him, when his New York Times bestseller status and knowledge of the law had enchanted me, I don't remember many times I was pleased to see him.
"Glad to find you back in the saddle," he says.
And for a smart man with intelligence brimming from his green eyes, he's too stupid to know how stupid those words are.
"I thought you might just quit."
"Why are you here?" I ask, my tone bitingly non-cordial. Kat chokes on her champagne. I've never known Lori to quit anything. She looks between us. "Oh, wow. You two know each other as in know each other, right?" "Unfortunately," I say, glancing at her, "yes." And at the same moment that I say again, "Why are you here, Lance?" Cole steps to my side.
"Apparently I've missed something interesting," Cole says dryly, looking at Lance. "Who are you and why should I care?"
It's a hard and rude address, and the unshakable Lance Woodman all but physically jolts with the impact. The way I'd jolted when, among other things, he'd called me not just a fool, but a stupid fool for quitting school.
"I'm a guest of Kat's," Lance replies.
"He's a fellow attorney and author who wants to collaborate, and I thought we could talk here," Kat offers. I didn't know he and Lori knew each other until now.
"You might have read a few of my books,"
Lance suggests, listing off a few titles and offering his hand to Cole.
"Lance Woodman."
Cole ignores his hand.
"How do you know Lori?" "We're old friends,"
he says, lowering his hand and glancing at me.
"Can we talk?"
"I'm working," I say, aware of the crackle of sharp energy spiking off Cole.
"Come with me, Lori,"
Cole orders, and I happily accept the command. He steps back, and I join him and we start walking.
"He's the ex you told me about the night we met, the older man you were infatuated with."
"Yes," I say, "but I wasn't infatuated." He stops by a vacant standing table, and we turn to face each other.
"You said that you were infatuated by him."
It's at that moment that a man in his mid-40s, with dark hair speckled with gray, joins us, and we turn to face him.
"Cole Brooks," he says. "I'm Nash Burns." "As in the expert pathologist who keeps turning me down?"
Cole asks. He laughs.
"Not by choice. To this point, you've asked for my time when I'm booked solid."
He eyes me.
"Is this your lovely wife?"
I feel my heart sink to my feet. Cole and I haven't touched, but we've been in deep conversation and often. We have chemistry. We're obvious, as Kat said. I mean, my God, we were just standing at this table alone in deep, intimate conversation.
"This would be Ms. Lori Havens,"
Cole replies.
"A rising star in the legal field you want to know and know well. A recipient of the Merrick Scholarship. I'm mentoring her, and she'll be working on my upcoming cases with me."
Nash holds up his hands.
"Apologies, Miss Havens," he says. "I assumed for all the wrong reasons, perhaps simply because you're lovely and I thought him a lucky man to have you by his side all night. Please, don't hesitate to call me should you need my services."
He offers me his card and quickly departs.
"Do not read into that,"
Cole says, facing me now, his voice low.
"No one else in this room has seen beyond our working relationship."
or they didn't say it and he did. I say, I need a minute to breathe, I say, and start walking, weaving through the crowd until I'm standing at the coffee pots filling a cup. I don't really want it. I just need to do something that gives me a moment alone to think. I'm with Cole. We can't stay away from each other. I work here. These are the pieces of a puzzle I must fit together in a cohesive way, and I don't know how. Cole steps to my side.
Come with me,
he says again. I set the cup down and turn to face him. I don't think it's smart for us to walk out alone together.
That wasn't a question, Lori,
he says, his voice tight with an undertone of unmistakable anger.
This is me, your boss, telling you to come with me now.
We can't walk out of this room alone together, I repeat. He narrows his eyes on me, his voice hardening, the whip of anger in his energy.
We can and we will, because A, we have a client in need that comes before this party, and B, I'm your boss, and that was a work directive, not a request. I'm going to take care of my client. You need to decide if my client is your client.
He turns and starts walking, expecting me to follow. Or maybe he doesn't. I quickly step to his side, but I don't speak. I was wrong in my reaction just now. I let personal feelings dictate my response, not business. And I could blame Lance's appearance, but any excuse is unacceptable. I need to say that to him when we're alone. What are we doing? I ask.
Our jobs,
he says, motioning to Reese, who meets us at the door.
I have a high-profile client with law enforcement breathing down her throat. I'm going to my office to deal with it. We're winding down anyway,
Reese says.
I can handle this here. Let me know if you need me.
Cole nods and opens the door, allowing me to exit first, and it's only moments later that we step inside the elevator where he punches the call button. But he doesn't reach for me. He doesn't look at me. He's angry. I let the personal side of things affect my job. He said he would not be easy on me. I don't want him to be easy on me. The door is shut, and he sends a text message, and by the time he's done, we're two floors up. The doors once again part, and I step outside. Still, Cole doesn't speak. We enter the main offices, and he flips on the lights.
My office,
he says, and that's all. We walk together side by side, and the silence continues. Finally, we are at his office, though I'm not even sure why this is a relief. It just is. He opens the door, flips on that light, and gives me room to enter, and I really don't know what to expect next. I step inside.
Shut the door,
he orders, following me into the room and crossing to his desk. This time I do as I'm told without question. I shut the door, and when I turn around, Cole is still standing, his fists pressed to the desk, clearly waiting on me. I cross the room, him watching my every step with those penetrating, unreadable blue eyes. I could sit, but I choose to stop between the two visitors' chairs directly in front of him. And now, I'm waiting on him. Now, it's his move.
Chapter 30. Cole. Lori and I stand across from each other at my desk with no more than 5 minutes to spare before the line on my desk phone rings with a client update. I spend 30 seconds of that time staring at her, unfamiliar, barely contained anger pulsing through me that may or may not have everything to do with her walking away from me at the party. Apparently, being called my wife after seeing her ex was disturbing enough that she forgot she was actually at the party to do a job. Or maybe it was the fucking orgasm I gave her right before she saw her ex. Do you love him? I ask, because her answer defines how I move forward, how we move forward. She blanches. What? Do you love him? God, no. She steps forward and presses her hands on the desk, leaning in closer to me. No, Cole, I do not, nor have I ever, loved Lance. Then why do you hate him so much? You just asked if I love him, she counters. As the saying goes, there's a fine line. I never loved him. I was infatuated, I supply again. With his talent, which is far different from loving him, and it wore off even before I left him? And yet you walked away from me in that room and attempted to refuse to leave with me, I counter. Not because of him. A man had just suggested I was your wife, which, as your intern, is a problem. 1 in 200 people we met together tonight suggested such a thing, I say. You overreacted. You're right, she says. I did. Had that man mistaken me for your wife any other time, I probably wouldn't have reacted like I did, but Lance rattled me. That pretty much tells me what I need to know. She pushes off the desk. What does it tell you? If you didn't care about him, he couldn't rattle you. Then I guess I'm not as strong as you, Cole. Lance is a part of all the bad I left behind. When that man called me your wife, it scared me. I don't want to end up working 4 jobs to survive the rest of my life. I straighten and fold my arms in front of me. I get why she's afraid of losing her second chance, but I don't like how much power Lance has over her. He is nothing to me, she says, as if reading the questions in my mind. And maybe I shouldn't care this much that you believe me. I mean, we're just having sex, right? But I do. Why do you care? Because, like everything else with you, I can't seem to not do it. You're like a drug, and it's making me crazy. Not crazy enough, apparently, I say. No one has ever made me crazy like this, Cole. No one. My phone rings, and I pick up the line. This is Cole. Did you miss me? Ashley asks. Yes, I say simply. Why are you still taking my client calls from Paris? Because I'm the contact everyone knew could get to you. And I still can. Who's the client? I ask. Tara Knight. Hold on, I say. I'm putting you on speaker with Lori Havens, my new... Me? She asks. No, she's the future me. I put Ashley on speaker. Tell us about the case, I order, folding my arms in front of my chest again and looking at Lori, who is looking at me. Hi, Lori, Ashley says. Hi, Ashley, Lori replies. Tara Knight called me in a panic, she says. As in the superstar actress? Lori asks. Yes, Ashley confirms. Her. She's the client. David Curry, the equally famous actor, is dead. He overdosed. The police think she gave him the drugs. She says she's being set up because they hate her father, which we know is true, since Cole represented her father in a securities fraud case and got him off. And several members of law enforcement fired, I add, for Lori's benefit. She's holding off the police, Ashley says, but she needs you, Cole. I already booked you a private jet. Normal airport and spot. It's ready now. Didn't you quit? I ask. About that, can you pick up? I grab the line. Trouble in paradise? Yes, he's a bastard. I want to come back. Do I have a job? With a fucking raise, I say. When can you be here? 2 weeks. Can you make it that long? We'll make it work. Good. Then I'll book you a hotel room now. Do you need one for Lori? Yes, I say. I do. I'll text you the details. There's a car waiting on you in the parking garage to avoid party congestion at the front of the building. You did all of this from Paris? And I'll be doing it from New York City soon. Later, boss. She hangs up. I set the receiver down and refocus on Lori. We'll go by your place and then mine on the way to the airport. No, Lori says instantly. No, I need to... Do your job, I say, leaning on the desk again. And with a chance to say you worked on a case this high profile. I'm quite clear on the opportunity this represents, she says. I'm anxious to work the case. That's not the problem. No, I think. Lance is the problem. You'll get your own room. I grab a few files and stick them in my briefcase. Grab whatever you need from the office and let's go. I round the desk. Unless you've decided you can't do the job, because this is the job, Lori. I can and will do the job and do it well, she says. I told you, I'm with you. I'm staying, but I'll meet you at the airport. That's all I was going to say. I'll take you by your apartment. I'll meet you, she insists. My mother is perceptive. She'll figure out there is something between us. Your mother works nights. And we are in a small building where everyone knows everyone. She cuts her eyes. She's lying. I don't like being lied to, especially by someone I'd actually started to believe mattered to me. I should leave her behind. Fuck, who am I kidding? There isn't a chance in hell that I'm leaving her behind. Let's go, I say, rounding the desk.
Lori. Cole and I slide into the backseat of the car, and despite the small space dividing us, We're miles apart.
Where to?
The driver asks. I give him the cross street a block down from my apartment, and my fingers curl into my palms. My dread over Cole being anywhere near my apartment building driving me insane. This isn't how this was supposed to play out tonight. We were supposed to go to his place. We were supposed to do a lot of things. I have a lot of time to think about our talk in his office and his fixation on Lance and what it means. He wouldn't care about Lance if he just wanted to fuck me, and I wouldn't have to risk so much for Cole if I just wanted to have sex with him. That's what I missed in my grand plan to end things tonight, or rather what I refused to admit. There's more to my connection with Cole than sex. We're not the blossom that matures and fails to bloom. We're that new bud that begins to blossom from the moment it's given life. We turn one block from my apartment, and I speak up. You can stop here.
Keep going.
Cole interjects, without looking at me.
I'll tell you when.
I don't argue. Cole obviously knows my intent, and he obviously knows my address since he stops the driver in front of my building. How did you know where I live?
It was in your file.
He says, looking over at me for the first time since we began the drive.
I have an excellent memory to go along with my ability to read people.
There's an undertone there that says he's read me and doesn't like what he's seen. What does that mean exactly?
Change into travel clothes,
he says, as if I haven't spoken.
We'll be in the air most of the night and change before we see anyone.
I open the door without inviting Cole to come up with me. He opens his door and my heart thunders in my chest. I could charge ahead to the apartment. I could leave him behind. But instead, I meet him at the back of the car. Suddenly, I'm a different person than I was 3 hours ago.
I said no such thing,
he replies. In other words, you think you just finally saw my true colors. You're really being an asshole, Cole Brooks. I turn and walk away, feeling the weight of his stare on my back. God, I feel this man in every possible way, but it doesn't matter. He's decided we're over, which should please me. That's what I thought was best, but now it feels pretty bad. With that thought, I dash for the door, key in the code, and when I turn and look behind me, I find Cole resting on the car, arms and feet crossed. I breathe out and enter the building, all but running up the 5 flights of narrow stairs. Once I'm inside the apartment, I lean on the door and take in what Cole would see, a crap apartment with crap furniture since we sold the good stuff. I need to get us out of here sooner than later. I pull my phone from my purse and dial the high-end restaurant I used to work at on the weekends and ask to be put on the on-call schedule. Once that is done, I hurry into the bedroom, change into jeans, switch to my Chanel purse, and then realize that I have no suitcase. I sold that too. I grab a large and medium duffel bag from the closet and make do, quickly filling them both. Once I'm packed, I call my mother. I was just wondering how your party went, she greets. Interesting, I say, choosing my reply cautiously. Actually, I'm headed out of town. It's a big case, a movie star, actually, that my boss is representing. How exciting. How long will you be gone? I have no idea. I'm concerned about leaving you, I add, only I realize now that wasn't my first thought, which means on some level I know she's really better now. Don't be, she says. This is good for you and me. I can stay with Marie-Anne, though, if it makes you feel better. You're going to use this to move in with her, aren't you? I'm not going to use this to do anything but celebrate your success. When do you leave? Now, and by private jet, I say. I'm at the apartment. My boss is downstairs waiting. How really, truly exciting. Call me when you can give me details. I will, I say, shoving a bag over my shoulder. I love you, Mom. I love you too, honey. We disconnect, and I gather my briefcase and duffels and head for the door. I find Cole still leaning on the car. I hurry toward him, and he meets me part of the way and takes my bags. If he notices I don't have a suitcase, he doesn't comment. He says nothing, actually, and once he set the bags in the open trunk and shut it, I decide I can't leave things like this. Cole,
we're fuck buddies, Lori. Let's leave it at that.
He starts to turn away. If that's all we are, then why are you this pissed at me? I call after him. He turns and faces me, his jaw hard, eyes harder.
I'm just giving you what you wanted, sweetheart.
He doesn't wait for my reply. This time when he starts walking, he doesn't stop until he's in the car. What I want. Only it's not what I want. In this moment, with Cole walking away from me this time, not me, him, I know that I want more with Cole. I know we've always been more, which was why I both pushed him away and why I dared to risk so much with him. And I know that if I don't speak up now, if I don't tell him what I feel, it's over. And I don't want it to be over. I rush toward the car. Chapter 31. Lori. Determined to make things right with Cole, I slip into the back seat of the car to find him on the phone.
Tell her I'll call her from the plane when I have time and privacy.
He listens a moment.
Right,
he says, leaning forward to tap the driver's seat.
I'll text you.
He settles back in his seat and disconnects his call, looking over at me.
That was Ashley calling from Paris again,
he says, his stare cool but not cold.
Our new client is freaking out and wants to talk to me.
Do you know any more details about why the police are questioning her? I ask, relieved at how easily we slide right back into work.
Not yet, he says, but once I talk to her, I'm going to call the lead on the case and back him off until tomorrow.
Are you for sure taking the case? I ask, thinking of his vow to only represent the innocent. Do you know her well enough to assume her innocence?
Not even close, he says, but at this point she's not being charged. And based on my history with her father, I feel an obligation to at least ensure whatever happens is fair and honest. Once we get to Los Angeles, we'll analyze her story, the facts, and law enforcement's motives, and choose our position going forward.
His cell phone rings, and he glances at the number.
Reese,
he tells me before answering. I listen to them talk about the trip and the party right up to the point that we pull up in front of a high-rise off Central Park.
I need to go,
he says to Reese.
I'll check in tomorrow.
He disconnects but doesn't look at me.
I'll be a few minutes.
He opens his door and leaves with no invitation for me to follow, and just like that, I'm left inside the car, on the outside of his world. Proof that no matter how much he's included me in a work conversation, he's now excluding me personally. He's sending me a message. He's pursued me. He's made it clear he wants me. I've pushed him away. And finally, he's going to let me win. He's done. We're done. Funny how you don't know how much you want something until it's dangling in sight but out of reach. Only he's not out of reach yet, I remind myself, but he will be if I don't do something now. I got in the car with a purpose, to mend our broken pieces, and now I need to get out to finish that mission. I open the door and exit, heading inside the building where I step onto shiny gray tiled floors with dangling lights overhead, and I glance around at the clusters of leather seats here and there that I barely register. I'm looking for Cole, and I don't see him, or much of anything else for that matter. I really need to get to Cole, and for unexplainable reasons, time feels important. My attention turns to the security station between me and the elevator banks, and I hurry in that direction, trying not to run, but adrenaline is driving me hard and fast. Excuse me, I say to the tall, lanky man manning the post. Can you please call Cole Brooks and tell him that Lori wants to come up?
Of course, miss.
He picks up his phone and punches in a few numbers, listens, and then shakes his head.
No answer.
He just went up, I say. I was in his car waiting on him, but I need to go up and give him something he forgot. Can you try again or call his cell phone? Or I can call his cell phone and hand the call to you? He looks like he might argue, but he picks up the phone again, punches in those few numbers, and then thankfully he says,
Yes, Mr. Brooks, there's a woman here that would like to come up. Ms.
He pauses.
Yes, of course.
He hangs up.
The 23rd floor, number 2311.
Thank you, I say, nerves erupting in my belly as I turn away and head past him to the bank of elevators, four on either side of me, and punch the call button about 6 times. The doors to one of the cars opens and I rush inside. I hit floor 23, and if I could pace in the small space, I'd pace. I try to think of what I'm going to say when I get to Cole's door, but my mind just isn't producing anything. It appears I'm just going to go with whatever comes out of my mouth, which isn't the normal way I like to operate, but I'll make it work. The car ticks by floor after floor until finally I arrive at 23. I'm at the doors waiting for them to open when they finally part to allow my exit, and the minute I'm able, I step off, picking my direction. And my God, no wonder he didn't answer the first call from security. He's way at the end of the never-ending hallway. It goes on and on, but finally I'm at the door, and there is a doorbell that I push. Cole opens the door almost immediately, looking every bit the sexy businessman barbarian, with his jacket and tie now gone. How could I not want this man? He backs up in silent invitation and allows me to enter. I step forward onto a dark gray, almost black floor into a foyer with a dangling light. The spicy, alluring, wonderful scent of Cole everywhere, consuming me the way he consumes me. He shuts the door behind me and I whirl around to face him. "Lance means nothing to me," I say, getting right to the point.
"You want to do this right here?"
he challenges, his eyes sharp, hard. "Yes, actually I do, because you're not hearing me. Lance means nothing to me," I repeat. "When I left him, I felt no regrets. In fact, and it is a fact, I felt more regret turning down your offer of coffee than I did when I left him. I hated the morning I left your hotel room alone. I hated making you stay in the car like you just made me stay in the car."
"You drew a line in the sand back at your apartment that was pretty damn wide and defined, as in, we fucked, now we work together, the end."
"No, no, that is not what I want. I didn't want you to take me to my apartment or go inside my apartment for what should be obvious reasons." I hold out my hands. "I didn't want you at my place. You live here and I live. You saw where I live."
"I don't care where you live."
"I do," I say. "I don't want you to see that part of my life. I really, really didn't want you to see it when I left that hotel room. But at least now I have a path forward. But I will not ever be the woman you see as a money grabber or charity case. I won't. That's not what I want to be to you. That's not what I want from you." I blink, and he's dragged me to him. His hand is under my hair, on my neck, and his legs pressed to mine.
"What do you want from me?"
he demands. "I want you to kiss me," I say, desperate for his mouth on my mouth.
"What do you want from me, Lori?"
"I want it to be okay to still want you tomorrow. I want
more,"
he says.
"That's the only acceptable answer for me right now. I want you too much for any other option to work for me. It's all or nothing. Now finish that sentence. What do you want from me?"
"More," I whisper. "I do. I want more. So much more." His mouth closes down on mine. A crash of passion and demand that is everything I need, and I do need. I didn't want to, but I do, and I don't fight it. I tug at his shirt and he tugs at mine. It's a matter of seconds and I'm shirtless, braless, and pressed against the wall. And I've brilliantly managed to get his shirt off. Or maybe he just took it off. I don't care. He's closer to naked and so am I. His fingers tangle in my hair, rough, erotic, and I think of that spanking, of me laying naked across his lap right at the same moment that he's tugging at my nipple, and I moan into his mouth. He responds with a low, guttural sound, impatiently working the snap and zipper on my jeans.
"Why didn't I do this while you were still in the damn dress?"
he growls, nipping my lip as if punishing me for changing clothes, and then kissing away the pain until I'm left panting when he's going down on a knee. His mouth settles on my belly with a lick of his tongue following, where he lingers just long enough to drive me insane. I want his hand, his mouth, I want him inside me. His hands finally move, sliding under the denim of my jeans, and impatience in his touch again as he drags them down, wraps his arms around my hips, and lifts me, freeing my feet. The minute I'm back on the ground, his hands grip my ankles and he licks my clit, sending a wave of sensation through my body before he's back on his feet, and I really don't know how it happens, but his pants are shoved down and he's rolling on a condom. Smart, I decide, since I can't remember how long it takes to be safe on the pill. I didn't care. I was in a sex-free zone I'm no longer in. Cole cups my backside with one hand, and his fingers of his other hand tighten in my hair.
I don't share, sweetheart. All or nothing means it's all me. That's where we're at, or there is nothing beyond this fuck.
I don't want anyone else, Cole. I just want you, and I... His mouth crashes down on mine, his tongue pressing past my teeth, stroking me until I'm mindless. We are all over each other, touching and kissing, and I barely register the moment he lifts me.
Damn it, woman, you are going to be the death of me.
He groans, and then somehow he's inside me. Oh, God, yes, he's inside me, stretching me, filling me hard and thick and... His arms wrap my waist, and he steps back, away from the wall, my legs instinctively wrapping his waist. And then he's pulling me down on top of him and driving into me again, all in one fierce move. And I should fear I'll fall, but I don't. I never feel fear with Cole. I never feel regret unless I walk away. His fingers spread between my shoulder blades, his powerful body thrusting, pumping, his hot gaze raking over my breasts, and I'm lost. The only time I'm lost and still found is with Cole. The only person who has ever made me feel like I won't fall is Cole. I hold on to him. I push against him. I let go and just feel this man and need this man. I don't want this to end, and yet I don't just need him. I need the way his gaze rakes hotly over my breasts. I need what every rough thrust, every touch promises. It comes at me with a hard pump of his hips and a stroke of his cock that drives me over the edge. I cry out and stiffen, tumbling over the edge, release quaking my entire body, my sex clenching. Cole lets out a low, rough groan that is so damn sexy. I feel that sound in every part of my body, and I watch the hard edges of his face distort and shift, ease with fierce masculine beauty, until his body begins to relax. He pulls me close and just holds me for long seconds, still standing, holding my weight and his. Slowly, he lowers me, burying his face in my neck as I do his chest. And now we're in those moments after the passion, when words matter, when what we say next will either keep us together or push us apart. Chapter 32. Lori. Cole walks me backward, presses me against the wall, and does a hot, quick inspection of my naked body.
You forgot to replace the panties I tore off you.
I didn't forget, I say. I wasn't letting you ruin yet another pair.
I'll buy you new ones, he declares.
I'll buy my own. I'm a Merrick Scholarship recipient, remember? His hand comes down on the wall, and he leans in close.
I remember everything about you, Lori Havens.
He says, his voice low, rough,
to the point of complete obsession, which is why I blame you for our tardiness.
He straightens.
We need to leave.
He picks up my clothes and hands them to me.
Which is why you can help me pack. Get dressed and come to my bedroom.
He issues that command and then walks away, disappearing into the apartment. I pat my hot cheeks, fairly certain that I'm blushing from that exchange when I was just crushing my naked body against his without a blush in sight. I push off the wall, and I'm also smiling as I start dressing. A man that makes a girl smile gets extra white knight bonus points. I tug everything back in the proper places and head down the hallway, the dark wood beneath my feet carried into the main living room where a gray couch and chairs frame a fireplace that seems to float in the glass of floor-to-ceiling windows. I pause, taking in the rich masculine style that screams power and money, my gaze drawn to an archway to the right that seems to lead to a den or library with rows of books on shelves. I wonder about the titles of those books and what they say about Cole Brooks.
You coming?
I glance up to find Cole leaning over the steel railing of a second level. My eyes meet his. A probe in the depth of his stare, a question in the air he has yet to ask. What am I thinking about his life, his world, his home? How does that affect us? It's perfectly you, I say, and that's a compliment. His eyes warm with my reply, but his reaction, his very need for answers, tells me that I have not said everything I need to say to him. I rush toward the elegant, winding steel staircase in the far corner of the room and quickly make the climb. The minute I reach the top level, I cut right and bring one hell of a hot man, now dressed in black jeans, boots, and a black t-shirt, into view. He leans on the railing, just in front of an open door I assume to be his bedroom. Watching me, tracking my every step, and I swear I know how he wins over a courtroom and a jury. When this man watches you, when he focuses on you, there is just him. Nothing else exists. I stop in front of him, and when he motions toward the bedroom, I catch his hand. Cole. The minute I say his name, he turns back to me. I greet him by pushing to my toes and kissing him before I confess, I got something wrong downstairs. His hands come down on my waist, and he walks me closer.
You got everything exactly right downstairs, sweetheart.
No, I say, I didn't. I presented my reasons for pushing you away, as if your success was a bad thing, when that is not the case. Please do not think that any of my feelings about my life reflect anything but admiration for your success, professional and personally.
I was born into money, sweetheart. In the end, I made my own, but I never had to question how I would pay for school. I never had to worry about taking care of a sick parent.
He hits about 10 nerves with that statement. You're setting me apart from you, I say, and that's what I did downstairs. That's not what I want.
I can assure you, Lori Havens,
he says, lowering his voice.
The last thing I want is to set you apart from me.
Then don't.
I won't,
he says. That's as far as I get. His cell phone rings in his pocket and he kisses me.
How much do you want to bet that's the driver wondering where we are?
He glances at the number and nods.
That would be a yes.
He motions for me to follow him into the bedroom, which ironically is a signal that we have to focus on work.
5 minutes,
he says into the phone, disappearing into the bedroom. I quickly follow, entering a room that, much like downstairs, is all clean lines and masculinity, with a low king bed with a gray leather headboard and seating area off to the left. Cole enters another doorway to my right and almost immediately returns with a suitcase in his hands.
For you,
he announces, setting it by the bed.
Those bags you brought with you won't transport easily.
In other words, he knows I don't have a suitcase. Thank you, I say. He arches a brow.
No other comment?
Just that you miss nothing, I reply.
If that were true,
he says,
I wouldn't have been cocky enough to believe that I'd won you over in that hotel room, and I damn sure wouldn't have gotten in the shower without taking you with me.
You had me at hello, Cole. You know that.
And yet I didn't.
You do now?
No,
he says,
but I intend to change that.
His cell phone rings yet again, and I'm left feeling that I might still be a challenge to Cole, and wishing we had time to really talk. Cole's call is quick, but he's only just disconnected when it buzzes again.
I'm never going to get packed at this rate,
he grumbles, answering the line with,
Cole Brooks,
which tells me he doesn't know the number on his ID. He listens a moment and then says,
Now what?
Ignoring his suitcase as he focuses wholly on the call, which I soon decipher as the private airline flying us tonight, dealing with some sort of challenge. I walk to the item sitting on the bed by his suitcase and get to work. He steps to my side, takes my hand and kisses it, a smile in his gorgeous eyes that reads like a welcome into his personal space. Just that easily, my fears that I am still a challenge and nothing more to Cole fade. He turns away from me and goes back and forth on his call before he disconnects the line and scrubs his jaw.
There was a problem with the pilot who was taking us up, he says, zipping up his bag before I can.
I frown, not a happy flyer even without that statement. What problem?
They have sleep regulations. He would have hit mid-flight, but the on-call pilot called in while they had me on the phone. We're good, and if we leave now, we can be in the air in an hour.
3 minutes later, we're rolling his bags through the lobby. Once we're at the trunk of the hired car, Cole helps me pack my bags into the suitcase, and then this time when we join the driver, both of us settling into the back seat, our energy is different. We're still sitting a professional distance apart, but there isn't a world between us. Just the conversation we haven't finished having, that we can't have until we are alone, that he may or may not know is important. The car starts to move, and for now I can focus on the other important conversation we can have. How far is the airport?
It's a private strip, Cole says, about 15 minutes.
This new pilot has slept his hours, right? He laughs.
I'm sensing you're not a good flyer.
If you mean, do I like sitting inside a big metal machine while some person I don't know or trust controls the wheel? No, I do not. And I already know that you're a control freak. You don't even like your files outside your office. How does it not bother you?
I'll save us if we start to go down.
I scoff and rotate to face him. Do not joke about going down. His eyes meet mine.
I really will save you. I have my pilot's license. My father was a pilot, and I started flying when I was 15.
Did you really?
Scout's honor. And yes, I was a scout. My father thought it would look good on a college resume, even though I was just a kid at the time. My mother thought it would teach me self-preservation and good manners.
Now I laugh. I saw those manners tonight, I comment, lowering my voice and repeating his words to Lance. Who are you and why do I care?
An asshole gets asshole treatment.
You didn't know that he was an asshole at that point, despite the fact that he is. You didn't even know who he was. He reaches down and grabs my thigh, pulling me next to him and behind the driver's seat, heat flaming between us instantly. His fingers flex on my leg, and he leans in close, lowering his head near mine, his voice low, intimate, for my ears only.
I saw how he was looking at you. I knew he'd had you. I knew he still wanted you. I made sure he knew that wasn't going to happen.
He cups my face, cheek pressed to mine.
I made sure he knows he has to go through me to get to you again.
He eases back, and even in the darkness and shadows, the flicker of passing lights illuminate the hard lines of determination on his handsome face and the heat of possession burning in his eyes. Perhaps I should push back. Perhaps I should worry that I will lose myself if I'm consumed by such a man as I had that day on the street, but I'm not the same person in the same situation. I lean in and press my lips to his. He cups my head in that hot, possessive way he does and kisses me to the point I really want to fuck him right here in this car. And when he pulls back and gives me a smile before sliding his arm around my shoulders to hold me close for the rest of the ride, I come to a conclusion. I've seen death and illness. Life is too short to feel what I feel with this man and walk away, especially when I trust this man, which is big for me after feeling betrayed by my father, and even Lance for that matter. That's the bottom line to me. Trust is paramount. As long as I can trust Cole, I can do this with Cole.
Chapter 33. Cole. The car turns into the airport, but my mind is momentarily back in my apartment, in the moment when I'd opened my door to find Lori standing there. I'd been certain she was going to resign. I'd needed her to stay. Need. That word used to be about sex to me, at least where women were concerned. I'd have sworn that to be the case with Lori this morning, but not tonight. Tonight I know I need this woman in ways that reach beyond how much I want her. This is new. This is a first. She is different. And I could take Lori back to my apartment and keep her there for a week solid to figure out what that means and where this is leading. I would, but duty calls and I'll settle for her in a private jet by my side. The car pulls inside the airport hangar and halts. I open the door and exit the car, offering Lori my hand, when any other associate would be exiting on the opposite side of the vehicle, kept at a firm distance. Lori's hand presses to mine and I help her out of the car, but beyond a quick glance at her mouth that really needs to be kissed again, and soon, I quickly greet the driver, tip him, and coordinate our bags with an airline staff member. I motion Lori forward, and we fall into step side by side in our walk toward the private jet, where for 6 hours I will have this woman nearly all to myself, much like I did that night in my hotel room. We reach the stairs, and my hand settles at Lori's back, which could be considered an innocent touch to a casual bystander, but of course there is nothing innocent about the way I touch or think about this woman. I guide her forward and allow her to climb the short set of steps before me, also allowing me to enjoy the view of her heart-shaped, beautiful ass in the process that only gets better naked and in my hands. Once we board the private jet, settle into luxurious side-by-side seats in the center of the plane, Lori by the window and me at the aisle, a flight attendant introduces herself.
I'm Katie. I'll be taking care of you on the flight. Can I get you both a drink to start off the flight?
I glance at her long enough to note her red hair and age her at 20-something, and only then because she's offered us drinks. Whiskey neat, I say, glancing at Lori. Are you a wine or whiskey girl this flight?
Coffee, please, she says primly when we both know she's far from prim. Lots of cream and Splenda.
The flight attendant hurries away and I turn to Lori. We're going to be in the air for 6 hours, I remind her. You can drink if you want to drink.
I'm a bad drinker,
she reminds me, lowering her tray table to set her MacBook on top.
Have you forgotten the wine?
I don't remember anything bad about the night we drank wine together except you leaving. And you can't leave this time.
I'm not leaving this time,
she says, which is the exact answer I'm looking for.
I'm going to stay around and own you this time.
I laugh. Own me, sweetheart, I say, and I'm not above having a momentary fantasy of her naked body draped over my lap again, only this time her mouth is on my cock, which motivates me to add, I'm looking forward to it.
Why do I know you just had a dirty thought?
She asks, opening her computer. Because I did, I say, leaning closer. Would you like me to share it?
No, she says quickly. You have a client to call, remember?
Never trust a flight attendant or much of anyone with our casework. We're waiting until we have our drinks and they pull the curtain. And that's not paranoid. I know an attorney who ran his mouth on a flight. He later found out that the flight attendant had been paid by opposing counsel to listen in on his conversations. Needless to say, the case took a brutally bad turn for him and his client. They lost.
I would have never been paranoid enough to worry about such a thing, she admits. Lesson learned, and thankfully not the hard way.
It's a good reason to never use your client's name in public, and a lesson I've learned personally from experience, don't say anything on the phone you don't want recorded.
You've had that happen?
Once, I say. I almost lost the case over something that wasn't at all what it was made out to be by the prosecution.
But you didn't lose.
That's the thing about a winning record, I say. Anyone who has one has skill and luck.
Whiskey neat and coffee, Katie says, reappearing with our drinks.
How long until liftoff? I ask Katie, accepting my glass from her, while Lori fires up the power on her MacBook.
Another 15 minutes, she says. That's a slight delay, I know, but the pilot assures me we'll make it up in the air.
I glance at my watch, which now reads 1 o'clock in the morning. Arrival time will be 4 in the morning LA time, I ask.
I'll confirm the exact time after consulting the pilot's flight plan, she says. Will you both be wanting snacks or sandwiches tonight once we're in the air?
Yes, I say, since I doubt Lori has eaten any more recently than me, and to speed this up. For now, I say, we need privacy to make a few private phone calls.
Yes, of course, she says, hurrying away and pulling the curtain shut behind her.
Didn't you say you represented this new client's father?
Correct, I confirm.
Then why did she need to call Ashley in Paris to get your number? I assume with as high a profile as her father's case was, you gave him your cell phone number. Are they estranged?
Most people wouldn't catch that little detail when they should. I'm impressed, but not surprised. Her father is in Europe, and apparently she couldn't reach him, I say. Or that's what she told Ashley. I motion to the computer. Are you connected to the internet? Can you search his name for anything new I don't know about?
I already did that while you were talking to Katie, she says. And on a cursory glance, there is nothing worth mentioning.
How did you search him if I never told you his name? I ask.
She's famous, Lori says. Her name got me there.
What did you find on her? I ask, knowing at this point that she's gone there, too.
Still looking, she says, glancing over at me. I need more time to promise you there's nothing beyond what we know thus far. Often I find things are hidden deep inside a write-up, and it takes time to find those tidbits.
Fair enough, I say, reaching for my phone. I'm going to call her and then the detective in charge of the case. I grab my phone and hit the number Ashley texted me for Tara. She answers on the first ring.
Cole,
she all but pants out. I need help, the police. Stop right now, I say. Do not say anything to me on an open line and expect it to be private. Now, keeping that in mind, I'll ask questions you answer simple. Understand?
Yes.
First, I'm on a plane waiting for takeoff. I'll be there in the morning along with one of my associates. Two, they want to question you on the death of David Curry. Correct?
Yes, but I...
Yes is enough, I say. Did you answer any questions without me?
Very few.
That's a yes. I'll need you to write down the details now while they're fresh. Who's the lead detective?
Josh Waller.
Text me his number. Does your father know this is going on?
No. She says, he's in Europe, and my biggest fear was that he'd rush back to protect me, which might be what the police want. This is about them using me against him.
But you told Ashley you tried to reach him. That was a lie.
Yes, but...
If you lie to me or my people, I will not represent you. If that's a problem, tell me now, before the plane I'm sitting on takes off.
It's not a problem, she says quickly. I'm sorry, I'm scared and overwhelmed.
I'm not a babysitter, and I don't offer sympathy. Even when billed for the time. You lie one more time and it might land you behind bars. As for your father, he needs to know what is going on. Call him and tell him, but advise him to talk to me before he gets on a plane. I pause for her confirmation.
I'll do it when we hang up.
Refuse to answer any questions from anyone until I arrive. That's all until I see you. We'll be at your home at 8. Text me the address when you text me the detective's number.
I'll make sure security knows you're arriving.
Don't make phone calls or talk about this to anyone, I order. Wait on me.
I'm innocent,
she says. Tell me tomorrow. I disconnect.
Well?
Lori asks when I hang up. She says she's innocent, and in my experience, those who are guilty make that statement 10 times more often than the innocent. I motion to the computer and her research. Anything worth sharing?
She had a personal relationship with the deceased, as in fuck buddies or more. I have photos of them together, dating back 2 years.
I would assume she would tell us that in the morning, I say.
Except that she told a reporter tonight that they barely knew each other.
My jaw clenches. She talked to a reporter tonight?
In fairness to her, I watched the TMZ footage. They cornered her and were shouting at her. She probably panicked. I saw that over and over in the cases I researched for Cat's columns.
The art of keeping one's mouth shut, I say, is an underappreciated skill. I down my drink.
The deceased wasn't a known drug user, from what I can tell, Lori adds. Of course, money can hide a secret, but the truth usually floods out through a broken dam once death occurs. At this point, though, I see nothing that indicates he was a user.
My brow furrows. But the death is being called an overdose. Was it suicide?
There is no indication of cause of death in the press, but it's only been hours since he died. Even TMZ has the case marked as developing. People like him are well guarded in these situations. When Prince died, it was days and even weeks before we knew the truth. I assume this will be no different. but a family history of mental illness could indicate there's more to look at there. But if that were the case, would law enforcement be questioning your client? I mean, I know they have to rule out foul play and do a thorough investigation, but does this feel right to you?
Our client, I correct. And clearly she knows something we don't know. And if she's smart, she'll be honest with us when we see her in the morning. My phone buzzes in my hand with a text.